Welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I'm Jacqueline Coley. I'm an editor at Rotten Tomatoes, where I write about independent film and awards.
I'm Mark Ellis. I'm a comedian, a Rotten Tomatoes correspondent, and I do a ceremony every year with my family that is witchcraft adjacent, but it's for winter solstice. So I've never gotten into Halloween witchery per se, but I think that's apropos given our topic.
Wow. I didn't know your parents would be into paganism, but I like that. I like thinking of you really being into that kind of stuff, Mark. I really do.
Well, they kind of wrote me into it. I'm usually just holding a beer in the corner while they do their little, you know, dance and ceremony by the fire pit. But it's a lot of fun. I feel more spiritual afterwards. There's no black cats crossing the path, and it's past Halloween. But I still think I'm safe in saying it's witch adjacent.
I mean, that's good, having it witch adjacent, bringing up the black cats. Both of us are dog people, although I do have a black dog. He's very much not cat-like, but it kind of fits today with our movie that we're talking about, because it's got a very famous black cat in it. Of course, we're talking about Hocus Pocus, the 90s nostalgia fest that pretty much anybody who watched the Disney Channel had to see on repeat every single October for the entire month. But the tomato meter says that it is 37% rotten, Mark. And a lot of people think that's a travesty, as the audience score is 71%. This is a like sacred cow beloved movie. So, Mark, what do you think? Is it wrong?
I am right there in the middle right now. This is one of those fun shows that I cannot wait to dive deep into Hocus Pocus, simply because I might emerge from this show with a feeling one way or another. And I think that there is a lot to love in this movie. I'm just not sure if it's fresh just yet.
I just love this movie. The reason why I love it has evolved over the years, but I stand by my love for it even today. But our guest, I think, is going to be able to maybe thread the needle between the two of us, but we'll get to that in just a minute. Before we do, Mark, please break down for us, for the two people who don't know, what is Hocus Pocus?
Hocus Pocus is a 1993 release from Disney. Heard of them? They own pretty much everything now. And back in the 90s, they put out a movie that did okay at the box office. One of the reasons is that it had stiff competition that summer. And the other reason is, yes, it came out in the summer, even though it was a Halloween movie. It stars Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Kathy Najimy as the Sanderson sisters. What's special about them? Well, they're witches. And they're also 300-400 years old, so they were around during the Salem times in the 1600s. And the spell gets cast, they're no longer in play, and they need something to reawaken them. And wouldn't you know it, some silly teenagers stumble into their house, which is now a museum, in 1993, reawaken the sisters, and they're back, and they're wreaking havoc on Halloween night. And yes, there is a cat named Binks who, like the Janet Jackson song would imply, definitely has at least 9 lives.
Ooh, calling out to Janet Jackson. I love that.
Rhythm Nation.
Well, this music, there's a lot of music in this movie as well. But before we break down the music and the acting and why I think it is one of the thirstiest movies out there, we're going to need to check in with our resident critical expert. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Tim Ryan, our review curation manager, and he's going to let us know about what was going on with the critics and their reception of Hocus Pocus back in 1993. So, Tim, take it away.
Thanks, Jacqueline. So when Hocus Pocus came out in 1993, there had been a couple interesting witch movies over the last couple of years. And even if the tone was a bit different, critics definitely had them on their minds when they were watching Hocus Pocus. Among them were The Witches of Eastwick, which was an R-rated movie, but it had three witches, played by Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer, living in a small town in New England. The Witches, by Nicholas Roeg, which starred Angelica Houston, was also a kid's film and was also pretty dark, and it also was about a coven with a nefarious plan for children. So critics compared it to those movies about witches, but a few critics also compared it to The Three Stooges and Sister Act. So as you can see, one of the criticisms of Hocus Pocus was that tonally it was all over the map. Hocus Pocus is at 37% on the tomato meter with 52 reviews, and the audience score is 71%. Reading through the reviews, there are complaints that Bette Midler was misused, or the plot has an interesting jumping off point but doesn't necessarily do a ton with it, that it's a little too busy, that Some people said it was too kitschy. Others said it wasn't kitschy enough. And there was certainly a mixed reaction to Bette Midler's cover of I Put a Spell on You, which half of them said, oh, this is great. And the other half said, I don't know about this. So what did some of the critics have to say? In a Rotten review, Janet Maslin of the New York Times wrote, apparently too much Eye of Newt got into the formula for Hocus Pocus, transforming a potentially wicked Bette Midler vehicle into an unholy mess. On the other hand, in a fresh review, Jeff Shannon of the Seattle Times wrote, Hocus Pocus remains a delightful family comedy, spooky but never scary, as it romps its merry way through the graveyard. The overall consensus was that is the type of thing that little kids might enjoy, but that grown-ups probably wouldn't. But now those little kids are grown-ups, and this movie has a cult following, so does it still have that old magic? Does it hold up? Jacqueline, back to you.
Okay, so it sounds like there was too many witches brewing up a cauldron back in 1993, and Hocus Pocus was just not the right brew for the critics, but... I don't know. Could you have like witches fatigue, like superhero fatigue, Mark?
I think you could, but I'm looking at some of these rotten reviews from critics that came out at the time. Stephen Hunter from the Baltimore Sun goes Shakespearean with it. He seems to be complaining about it because it's released out of season. As if we don't get Christmas movies running up in October now. I think a lot of the critical disdain for this movie might have just been because they weren't prepared for it because the leaves weren't changing yet.
No, I completely agree with you on that, Mark. I think, yeah, everybody's going to have their problems with it. We have to remember this is 1993. This is before Halloween became the thing that it is now. This was back when Halloween was just like for kids. And I think that's where you, I, and our guests kind of saw it as children. So let's go ahead and bring her on here today. I'm talking, of course, about Caitlin Bush. She is an editor at Sci-Fi Wire, and she's going to be joining us today to talk about her love, affection, maybe, for Hocus Pocus.
Not necessarily affection. here's the thing. I don't hate it. But I also don't love it. I'm very similar, I ride that middle line where I'm like, I think I saw this movie a little bit too late in my life. My cousin forced me to watch it after realizing that I had never seen it before. And he was so obsessed with it that by the time I got around to it, I think it was built up in my mind a little bit too much because everyone was constantly like, this is the best movie ever, blah, blah, blah. And it didn't do it for me.
So what age really were you? Didn't. What was the age?
I think I was 14 when I watched it for the first time. So just beyond that threshold where you're kind of starting to be self-aware about the movies that you're watching when you actually start thinking a little bit more critically, I think, about film and television, at least on my part. And by the time I got around to this movie, it just like, it didn't do it for me. It's grown on me as I've gotten older, granted, because I can understand like the appreciation and the nostalgia, and I have so many friends who adore it. But I just, my first impression of it was meh.
Isn't it weird where you have movies that could be good, could be bad, but then there's this other threshold that certain films have to pass because people love it when they saw it. And so now you hear before you even get a chance to see the movie, oh, you're going to love this. This is the best something ever. And so then when you see it, you're not watching it just for a movie to see if you like it or not. You're seeing it because everybody else loves this thing. And so in the back of your head, you're wondering, wait, why do people love this so much? What is wrong with me?
The bar is set too high.
Yeah,
it's up there because I came to this movie in the theater, Jack, when I saw this when I was either just the last day of 12 or was turning 13. So like Max, I had not lost my virginity yet. And my brother and I went to go see this in the movie theater, and we went and we liked it. And we laughed a lot, and we walked out, and we moved on with our lives. It wasn't anything that we said, oh, we cannot wait for Halloween. It maybe was a Halloween primer as far as candy goes, or as far as some light witchcraft goes, but it wasn't like, oh, now we got to count down the months until we get to dress up and go trick-or-treating. So as much as I look at this movie now, and I think a lot of people do, as your conduit into the Halloween season, I didn't look at this movie like a lot of people would watch Elf or watch Scrooged to get into the Christmas spirit. That movie didn't do that for me. But now, 30 years later, everyone loves this movie as the official kickoff of pumpkin spice latte season.
Yeah, I mean, and look, this is a Disney movie, and I give Disney a ton of credit because they indoctrinated me very young with the Disney Channel. Like, I was in from the Goofy movie to Sister Act to this, of course, with Hocus Pocus. And the amount of times that they played this movie is the reason why I think so many people became obsessed with it, because that's when I first saw it. I saw it, I can't remember the year, but I want to say it was not, it was 94, 95. So it was at least a year after it came out. It was on the Disney Channel. And man, they just blow through those Disney Channel movies during October. And that's where I caught it. And as the, you know, little burgeoning musical obsessed kid that I was, the music is what hooked me in the first time. But I really thought it was just genuinely funny. And I thought that Zachary Binks was cute. So those were like my kind of like first impressions. I was a child. Okay.
You thought the dead kid, the kid who was dead for 300 years?
I thought he was cute. I don't know.
You don't have any issues with dating a dead kid?
It's like Tuck Everlasting energy.
Oh, yes. Good call out, girl. What it was? This was a post Casper the Friendly Ghost viewing for me. And I think that that movie, I think, got a lot of girls into ghosts prematurely, maybe. I don't know. I was definitely preteen. So we were having a good time. But Caitlin, I want you to ask you specifically. I mean, I guess you're still kind of middle of the road about it, but like maybe give me one on the good, one on the bad. What exactly are you saying is something that really made you like it? And maybe what was something that made you turn off?
Ooh, interesting. Okay. So starting with the good, because we have to respect the fact that so many people love this movie. I think something that really stands out to me as good is the performances from the Sanderson sisters. Say that five times fast. They like lean into these roles so hard. The dedication that they are bringing, the physicality, like the way that they move their mouths and hold their faces, and like Sarah Jessica Parker just screaming constantly, it's great. It's really fun. I think I appreciate it actually now more as an adult, like just watching these three actresses just go ham on these roles and clearly enjoying themselves so much. And then I think to the rest of it, I agree with a lot of what the critics' consensus was at the time, which is that there's too much going on. Like, you've jam-packed, like, all of this, like, weird stuff about virginity, and then these women who have to, like, steal the youth from children to stay young.
Oh, no, this movie has everything. It's got virginity and it's got paganism and yabos and the hottest
ridiculous.
Halloween
movie. There's a cat
movie.
That's also a person, and then there's there are musical numbers and zombies and, like, how many? And then there's bullies, too. There's, like, classic, like, 80s, 90s bullies. Like, my God.
I love the bullies getting their comeuppance in this movie. It makes me so happy because I was physically disturbed.
He leaves them to die, though. Did they deserve to die, though?
Good. Because they took his shoes. They stole his new cross trainers. I love what Max did, because Max said, "I'm going to save my shoes, but I'm not saving these kids from any. They do not deserve it." Wait, I'm sorry. Is Ice going to grow up to be a doctor? Is he saving lives? No. Max has every right to just leave them in the lurch. But what?
So they deserve to die?
Apparently.
Yeah. They're like 16.
They're not going to die. It's going to be a happy ending, like that ghost kid from the 1600s. They're going to turn him into a cat. He's going to run around, get hit by cars, puff right back up. They're going to be fine. Look, the thing about this movie that I think more than liking this movie, I'm just impressed with the effort and the reach that Disney had, because I don't think that Disney puts their stamp on this movie without a lot of edits today. I think that they took a lot more chances back then. When we talk about the virginity, when we talk about how, like Jacqueline referenced, they say yabos multiple times in the movie. There's so many things about this that I just don't feel like Disney would allow to pass in 2020. And so, as much as maybe it is too much of a PC age now, but this movie, for being rated PG, this is one of the hardest PGs I've ever seen.
By the way, Danny, I love your costume.
Thank you. I really like yours too. Of course, I couldn't wear anything like that because I don't have any, what do you call them, Max? Yabos? Max likes your yabos. In fact, he loves them.
It is horny as hell.
Yeah. And this, getting to that one also, but let's not forget, there's like child torture and murder in the first 10 minutes. Like, we don't even get to like through the first act before we are murdering and freaking Palpatine lightning children for all of enjoyment. But look, for me personally, yes. Looking back on it now, I know as a child, the music is something I love because I remember recording Sarah Jessica Parker's like 1 minute song. And I know that I'm not the only one because if you go on YouTube, there's like 15 covers of this. It's not even a full song. It's literally just
it's
her
the
being
one.
Like,
it's the one where she's luring the children kind of thing.
Yeah, like that one. The lure is very sexy.
Okay. All right. There's a fine line there.
There's a fine line. I'm saying that the dance that she used was a very, very, like, seductive dance. I mean, like, boobs are out.
Use thy voice, Sarah. Fill the sky. Bring the little brats to die.
Come, little children, I'll take.
It's got a nice little melody to it. And like Vanessa Hudgens covers it. Like, I'm not the only one who really loved this song that is not even really a song. And so I know the music is what hooked me first, probably some Zachary Binks. But going back to it now, it is the horniness of it. This movie has no right to be this thirsty. You don't get that in Disney movies. And I applaud the balls of it.
You brought it up, Mark, too.
Yeah, it's just that device. This whole thing with the kids have to be a virgin in order to make this magic happen. It's like, wow, Disney is really just signing off on that back in 93. What I like about Sarah Jessica Parker's character, though, because obviously if me and my brother are going to see the movie in the theater, were we paying attention? Yes, we were. But it was also... she is really funny in this movie. Every look, going back to Caitlin's point, that she gives, and Kathy does too, they're so locked into the character. And so I think one of the real qualities about this movie that would have me leaning towards Fresh is just how funny they are. Just little asides and stuff like that. And when you put it in the greater context of the fact that we're going to see this movie because there's three villains on the poster in a Disney movie, this is decades before Maleficent. Or the upcoming Cruella de Vil movie. So you could probably count on one hand the amount of family movies that were sold on the basis of the villain. You had adult horror movies like the Nightmare on Elm Streets of the world and the Friday the 13th, the Halloweens, where you go to see the bad guy. But these are three witches that we're rooting against in the movie, but they're just so irresistible. It's like, yeah, I want us to win at the end of the day, but I want these witches to have a lot of fun before we get there.
You're right. I never really keyed in on that, the fact that this is a villain-based movie. Obviously, we get that the biggest stars involved in this are the villains, but like, yeah, they're the really driving force, and the kids are just kind of the foil. It's kind of interesting that way. Also, too, I will go ahead and say that I don't know. I want to say that this movie is scary, but it would have been scarier had the people involved in it gotten their way. The original scriptwriter for this wrote Child's Play. Like, I just wonder what the original darker version of Hocus Pocus that has been so hinted at but we haven't seen would have been. Like, imagine if Dimension or like New Line produced Hocus Pocus. What were we going to get? Caitlin, though, I want to ask you, for what we did get, is there a particular scene that you like? I mean, I talked about the Sarah Jessica Parker on the broom, but is there one that you go back to maybe saying like, this is why this is terrible, or maybe the one that you go back to and say, okay, I get it.
The scene that always like weirded me out the most for years and years, and again, because I first watched this when I was 14 and had started to fully form as a person, maybe a little bit, when we were watching it, my cousin and I were watching it, just like the obsession with, I think, virginity. Anytime that they bring it up, it's like this weapon that can be used, like you can harness it. And like, I don't know if that is it can be interpreted either way. Like, it can either be a you are a pure, better soul for being a virgin, or it's a dangerous thing to be a virgin and you better get rid of that pesky virginity, like, right the hell now. Otherwise, you're gonna, like, light a candle one day and summon a bunch of dead witches from 300 years ago.
Black flame candle. Made from the fat of a headman lit by a virgin on Halloween night. So let's light the sucker and meet the old broads. And do the honors?
No, thanks.
So I think anytime, like, they were really leaning into that, to this day, just weirds me the hell out. I don't know. Like, is that the kind of message that we're sending? Really?
There's a lot of 80s movies like that. Even 80s horror movies. Anybody remember Once Bitten with Jim Carrey, before Jim Carrey was a thing? He it's a comedy movie where he gets bitten by Lauren Hutton, I think, as a vampire. Very similar. She's got to drink the blood of a virgin to stay young. And I remember that movie for the fact that, like, they have sex, basically, so that he doesn't get killed. And it's like, she's like, well, it wasn't good. And I was literally thinking, it's like any virgin cares. Anyway, sorry, I'm just taking
that's
a little.
That's a lot of pressure to put on a virgin. Yeah, to sleep like with a vampire right off the bat. I mean, vampire sex has got to be a little intimidating, even more so than normal sex would be if you're a virgin. Like, if I'm going to sleep, if I'm going to lose my virginity, I do want a good story, so maybe a vampire is the good way to go. But it just seems like it's a very tall mountain to climb for your very first hill. With this, it seems like you're damned if you don't, damned if you do, because what this movie basically does is just throw all that in the face of Jamie Kennedy's character, Randy, from Scream, where he's telling you, if you are a virgin, then you can't sleep with anybody or else you're going to die. But now in this movie, unless you have slept with somebody, you're going to be in the witch's brew. So kids, just stay away from strangers is the point. Don't even go trick-or-treating.
I will add to that you bring up the virginity, Caitlin, because it is problematic boots down. Let's be real on this one. Besides the virginity, just this idea that the Sanderson sisters are so obsessed about being young, you know, this is like a very common theme with witches, and it's just like this haggly thing. And again, like, embrace getting older, and, you know, look at people like, you know, Goldie Hawn and Susan Sarandon, who are hot into their 70s and have faith.
It's Betty White. The demonization of older women for me.
Yeah. Or be Betty White and just be awesome into your 80s. It doesn't matter. Just embrace it, because it's happening to us all. Also, again, they make the Sanderson sisters have modern day knowledge, even though they're 300 years dead. Like, how does she know about a learner's permit? I would like to know. how does she know? And how do they know about microphones and dance choreography and, like, placing themselves correctly on the stage for Bette Midler's, like, big number? Which we have to thank Kenny Ortega for that, the director of this, who's a choreographer. And I think his involvement and the second screenplay guy is why we got this sort of, like, hodgepodge of a movie. Because he shoved in musical aspects every chance he could get. And the other guy who also wrote Mystery Men and The Adventures of Pluto Nash, I think we can say that he is responsible for all of the sort of, like, broad comedy that we saw. So I get why it's a bit of a hodgepodge and leaves somebody a bit behind. But Mark, did you have a scene from it that you marked as particularly great?
It might be when the Sanderson sisters first come back to the modern era, if you will. And before they're making jokes about learner's permit or they know exactly how a microphone works, it's so funny to see them acclimate to this new world, because they do it fairly quickly, but they're still worried about the Black River that turns out to be asphalt. And they're still feeling their way around the house, and they're just so happy to be back. And it's just such a fresh burst of energy where you don't always get that from the villain presence in the movie. You're waiting for something to lighten the screen up, something to just give us the satisfaction of why we came into the theater. And when they come back to 1993, that's why I paid to see this movie. That's why I'm shoving popcorn in my face. That's why I'm already planning my Halloween costume months in advance, is because this makes me happy.
"'Tis a black river. Perhaps it is not too deep." "'Tis firm!"
"Careful, Winnie."
"'Tis firm as stone!"
"Why, it's a road!"
I live for any times they actually stay within their fish out of water timeline. So when they don't understand, like, "Oh, I smell children, but I don't see children," I'm like, yes, give it to me, Kathy. And actually, we're a bit on a Kathy Najimini you know, tilt right now with Sister Act and Hocus Pocus. Where is Kathy Najimini? What's she been doing? I miss her. I love
her. She's our first returning champion because we had Sister Act 2 on the show a couple weeks ago, and now we're doing Hocus Pocus. So I think Kathy Najimy is the first one that we've had multiple movies in their catalog. So congratulations to Kathy. I'm sure she's very thrilled about this achievement.
She's honored.
Exactly.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Caitlin, I mentioned him because he's definitely my, you know, probably between Jacqueline's favorite bit. Binks, how are you feeling about Binks the cat?
I like Binks the cat. I like cats. I like dogs more. Cats are great too. Here's the thing. I always, as a teenager especially, was like, cats are not like the loyal creatures. Like when you're typically thinking about like what kind of animal is going to stick around for like 300 years to try and help out his sister, to like be the loyal pet, like you would assume that they would have turned him into like a cute little like beagle or something like that. Obviously, we have to stay with the Halloween theme. A black cat makes the most sense thematically. But also, a cat would not stick around for 300 years. He still has to live as a cat. Like, he has a person's mind, but he's still, like, down in the sewers, like, hunting mice. Like, that's the kind of thing that will psychologically ruin you for the remainder of existence. And you're telling me that he was loyal enough to stick around for 300 years to, like, make sure that he could free his sister? I don't buy that.
And getting hit by cars. I think that's the one reason why... It's not a dog, because I don't think I could have handled it if I see a dog. Even if I know the dog's going to pop right back up, I don't want to see a dog get hurt in any. If there's a little bit of kitty torture in it, I can get over it as long as I know the kitty's okay. But I would put Mr. Binks, I'd put Binks up there with, and this might upset a lot of folks, I think he's just as great and as valuable as the black talking cat from Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Am I out of line here? Am I giving Binks way too much credit? I think amongst talking black cats in the history of entertainment, I would put Binks up there with the best of them.
I don't think he's that iconic. I don't think there's enough attitude there. Granted, we had more time with Sabrina the Teenage Witch, but
I'm just a sucker for accents on cats. Like, it doesn't matter if it's Binks or Puss in Boots, who we all know is the cutest character in the history of movies.
Oh, yes. I will give you on Puss in Boots. I don't know. I like some cats. Garfield. I'm down for Garfield. I like cartoon cats. I don't know about movie cats, but if I think about it, I could probably find one that I like.
Ooh, quick aside. Okay, so the best Halloween, that for me, if you talk about Halloween primers, Hocus Pocus is fine. Garfield's Halloween is amazing.
Oh my God.
When I was a kid, we had Garfield's Halloween on VHS. And then the next thing that aired on, I think it was on ABC, was this special that involved a witch and goblins. And I don't know if anybody out there has ever, somebody please let us know if you've seen this. Rue McClanahan from Golden Girls fame played a witch who kept trying to cast spells, and she had this army of goblins that she sent up to Earth, and one of the goblins brings back this girl. But then I think the goblin felt bad about bringing this young child, who's probably a virgin, it's probably why the goblin picked her, down to Rue McClanahan. And so then I think the goblin turned on Rue and then saved the little girl. So anyway, if you haven't
seen it. Talk about shoving everything into a movie. Like, talk about, like, packing it too full. Oh, my God.
Is it too full, though, or is it just full enough? Oh, and here I go. Look at me.
Okay,
being just as bad as this movie. Honestly, also, let's talk about that bus driver.
Oh, my God, yes.
He was they pull up the Sanderson sisters and they get on the bus. And first of all, I will say, Winifred started it because she's like flirting with him. She's like, we seek children. And he's like, I'll give it a couple of tries. It's like, no, sir. No, sir. We were not offering sex. They said they were looking for children. You don't know. They could be nuns that want to, you know, do a mission service to the children. That was just so, ugh, taking it up an extra notch. But according to Disney, this was a children's movie, which I think is really funny. Because is it, though? We didn't even get into Doug Jones. They literally brought back their freaking side dude. Like, who, by the way, I've gotten in trouble for this. So I just want to take this little aside. Any man who dates or pursues two sisters, as in blood sisters, sorry, you're stupid. You're a player and, like, you're an F-boy. That's the best way I can put it. It's like, true. You know what I mean? Like, screw you, dude.
Within, like, 5 minutes of each other, too. Doesn't even take a breather.
It's very trepidatious if you're going after sisters. I have never tried to romance multiple members of one family. But I do have a friend who was dating. He was dating a young lady, and then they broke up amicably, and then the young lady ended up dating and marrying the brother. So it goes both ways. Now, in the case of Salem bus drivers, I look at this as, yes, was he too aggressive and forward? Yes, but he was also equal opportunity. I don't think he had his eye on Sarah Jessica Parker's character necessarily. He was happy to have three. He was happy to have riders on his freaking bus. And I think he would have been just as happy with Bette Midler or with Kathy and Jimmy or with Sarah Jessica Parker. Dude's just looking for some comfort. And as far as bus drivers go, not the least attractive bus driver I've ever seen.
That is a fair low
point.
Bar.
However, I would like to point out that we have delved into defending the creepy bus driver.
Thank you.
From Hocus Pocus. And I can't stand for this.
He's not as bad as the bullies.
I enjoy how horny it is for how off-putting it is, but I will never defend that. That dude is ending up on, like, one of these, like, podcasts, like, last podcast on the left about, you know, the murderous bus driver who terrorized Salem in the 1990s and killed 14 women and kept their toes in his trunk.
Question.
Anyway.
Question. That brings something to mind. Question. Is there a precedent to a generation of people growing up with this movie and loving it and now being obsessed with true crime?
Ooh. I think there's a generation of kids that grew up watching this movie and loving it and being obsessed with Halloween. Because I do believe, like, Halloween became the thing where, like, it's such a thing now. Like, it's a bar thing. It is a college thing. It is an even, like, old people like me that don't like people thing. They dress up at home and put the pictures on Instagram. Yes, I am forecasting what I'm going to be doing October 30th. Don't judge me. But yeah, that there is like, I think a big part of the Halloween obsession that came from this movie, the DVD sales, the re-airing on Disney Channel. Halloween became more of a thing. And even the parties that are there, there were not really that many Halloween parties like that. The reason why they're doing big Halloween parties in Salem is because it's Salem. That was not, I think, prevalent throughout the world in 1993. I don't know, Mark.
And the celebration of witchcraft, too.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of kids saw this. I do think this is a kid's movie because the way that witchcraft is handled, we can go down the rabbit hole with creepy bus drivers or losing a virginity or is that noble? Are you a loser? But when you look at the actual spells they're casting and the things that are going on, that you never feel a real threat with this movie, like anybody's going to have their heart ripped out or anything gross is going to happen. There's nobody walking around with machetes. You have witches flying on brooms or on vacuums, and they're delightful. So I think, yes, it is a kid's movie, but a lot of kids probably saw this movie and were inspired to start to forage into the dark arts. There's actually a quote. Our expert researcher, Mark Hoffmeyer, who has the number 3 podcast in Croatia. I'm giving you a shout out, Mark. Congratulations. We're coming up on your heels. There's a witch named Sarah. She's a tarot reader and a witch, and she describes the film as perfect because she remembers wanting to put myself in a world like that, where magic was real, black cats could talk, and Halloween was the one night of the year the dead could come back. So as a young witch, you need goals to reach for, was her point. But there's also witches who criticize the movie because it does have all the talking black cats and the flying on broomsticks. And they say, no, I cry foul because that's not what real witchcraft is. So with anything, if you're going to build something up, and you're going to celebrate the lifestyle of it, people who actually practice that lifestyle are bound to have a backlash if you're not portraying it accurately. In this case, I think it's because you're dumbing it down for kids.
Yeah, but
it's a good point.
I mean, are we really mad that we lost the pagan audience?
My family is.
Your family is. I'm kidding. No, I respect everyone. Honestly, there's a great documentary called Hail Satan about Satan worshipers. Quite good. Very surprising. And they were very nice people. I was like, you know what? I could see that. Look at me.
They're chill.
This is how you get seduced by a cult. Looking at stuff like that, you're like, oh, you know, maybe.
Satan worshippers. They're just like us. Like they're walking, very nice, they're holding their yoga mats, and they have their little their Starbucks tumbler, and they're like, oh, no, we still work out. We still love watching the Golden Girls, and we also worship Satan.
And it's just a thing that they do, and it's fine.
Since I mentioned it, I also want to give a shout out to Mark Hoffmeyer, because he made me aware of the fact that the reason probably why I love the Sarah Jessica Parker song is because it was composed by none other than the late, great James Horner, the guy who also composed the Titanic theme. And anybody who could write that song, as in the song that would not die, I don't think people appreciate how big that song was. My Heart Will Go On just went on. It's like, I don't think there was something even close to it, except for maybe Frozen Let It Go for the under 18 crowd. That is probably the closest thing I could say for how nuts people were for his song on that one. So he knows how to make a catchy tune. So that's why I probably liked it.
Hey, look, if we're going nuts on music, though, we cannot undersell how big of a star in multiple entertainment avenues Bette Midler was when this movie came out, because a couple years prior she had just been nominated for an Academy Award and an Emmy. I think she's still is missing the Oscar from the mythological EGOT, but she also had huge songs come out like that, You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings and stuff like that. So she was the biggest star in this movie. And the fact that she was kind of changing tenor and playing a witch, and then you also had these two up-and-comers alongside her as the Sanderson sisters, I think that's what got people in the movie. But this movie opened against a tidal wave of hit films. I think three of the top 10 movies from that year all naturally came out in the summer. So you had to deal with movies, whether it was Jurassic Park or The Fugitive or The Firm, that this movie just, that's why the box office receipts aren't there. But I'm always impressed with a movie that can find legs afterwards on home video or DVD or on the Disney Channel. It's just people will not stop celebrating this movie.
Yeah. And they still do to this day. Just go check, you know, the pages of Tumblr, Pinterest, just hashtag Hocus Pocus from this point forward in the month, and you will find some people who love this movie a little bit too much. Maybe if
a little too much.
A little too much. It's a cute movie. I enjoy the movie, but for all the reasons that we kind of laid out, it's got some issues.
Well, it's to the point where I was in a group text that I was in. I was like, oh yeah, I'm doing this. I'm going to be talking about Hocus Pocus, and they're like, oh, you're just going to talk about like how wonderful it is and how great it is and how it's the best movie ever made. And I was like, no. It's fine. And like the amount of like just all caps like responses that I got in this group chat, deeply concerning. Well, I might have to rethink some friendships.
I have a question for you guys. This is Lucy. I read that Leo, was going to be cast as Max originally, but he turned it down for What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Do you guys think you would have liked it more if Leonardo DiCaprio actually got that role? Because I do. Like if Steven Spielberg ended up directing it and then Leo was like the lead, I feel like it would have been like
if Steven Spielberg had directed. Like no shade to Kenny Ortega, but I know that Spielberg wanted it to be darker, and once he realized that it was going to be made by Disney, he was like, never mind, not my thing. I'll go make Jurassic Park instead. But
he was trying to do like Gremlin style-y, I think.
He wanted to make something that was that dark tone that we had been talking about, where it maybe had leaned a little bit more into realistic witchcraft, or it had done this or that and been more horror than kitsch, which is not to say that kitsch is bad. But I think I would have liked it more if Spielberg had directed it, which would change the entire vibe of the movie. But also, I'm not that big of a Leo person, and I never have been. So
Oh, if the audience listening could see the gasp that producer Lucy just
like let out, like her whole body.
Well, here's the thing, though. I don't think Leo could have been in this role because clearly you had to be a virgin for the Sanderson sisters to go after you. And I don't know that Leo is keeping that card in his pocket by the time he's Max's age. So I think probably good for the Sandersons that it wasn't Leo DiCaprio.
I think I will go ahead and say that in the end, I do think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong, but I think it's because I have a different enjoyment of this film now. If I was looking back on it the way I looked at it at 14, I do not like the movie exactly for the same reasons, but I really still enjoy it for, again, just the audacity of it and the fact that it looked like everyone was having fun. It's campy goodness. I'm not one of these people that start celebrating Halloween midway through September, but I do like to put it on right around this time and say, hey, it's the spooky season. And I appreciate it for that. What about you, Mark? What are your final thoughts, as it were, on Hocus Pocus?
I love Halloween season. I love celebrating it. I love watching horror movies. I love walking into my local coffee shop and getting those pumpkin notes in my nose. I still get my same boring black iced tea unsweetened every morning, but shame. I still enjoy the season. It means that football is in the air. It means that we get to see the leaves changing. But Halloween proper, you could not find me in a costume unless my significant other, who currently doesn't exist, would convince me to wear a costume that would accompany her to either a real party or a Zoom party. So I don't care about getting up into costume, but I still love celebrating Halloween. And so for that, I think Hocus Pocus, I like it more for what the movie represents than the actual execution of the movie as a film. So I think Rotten Tomatoes is right in that it's a rotten movie. I don't think it's as rotten as a lot of the critics at the time made it out to be. I think it's very enjoyable. And look, just because I'm saying Rotten Tomatoes is right doesn't mean that you can't celebrate the movies. I love movies that are not fresh on the tomato meter. So it's not taking away the celebration of the film. And the fact that we get to see witches in a different light than maybe what we were accustomed to, that they're scary and they want to take our soul or boil us into stew or whatever, but they're also really funny and they have personalities and they have different looks and they have different takes on things and different viewpoints. I thought that was all cool. So I like celebrating Hocus Pocus, even if I think it's not quite a fresh movie.
I stand by the assertion that if Rotten Tomatoes isn't wrong, I don't want to be right.
I think that's what everybody listening to our show thus far in the episodes we have cobbled together has felt during at least one of these exercises.
Yes.
Is, hey, if they're talking about a movie that's rotten, I don't want to be right.
Actually, I like that. We're gonna bring that one back. As cheesy as it is, we're gonna keep that one. Be on the lookout for that one, folks. It's gonna be a staple in the podcast.
Okay, but wait, can I ask y'all, what is, if it's not Hocus Pocus, what is the Halloween primer movie for you that just gets you locked into, ooh, it's spooky season because I'm watching this movie?
I'm gonna have to, it's gonna be a classic horror film for me. I think this year, I think at the beginning of October, that was when I watched The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. So I gotta go like classic horror to get me in the mood for all of that. But yeah, I agree with everything that you said, Mark. Like, just like gonna sign that and like attach myself to everything that you just said because I agree wholeheartedly. Yes.
I still, The Exorcist to this day, I still have trouble getting through the whole thing. And I consider the greatest horror movie ever made, but it's just seeing Pazuzu, the little flashes at the end. Dear God, what am I doing to myself? Don't I like
seeing
my favorite thing? Why am I ruining it?
Not ashamed to say, never seen it. Don't plan on it because of just what y'all said. There was a time where I did not watch horror movies at all, Mark. There was like a good 30 years on this earth where I was like, F horror movies and the horse they rode in on. Like, I'm not about it. It gives me nightmares. I have since grown up a little bit, but I will take y'all's word that it's great and leave it at that.
And do the exact opposite thing, which is watch Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, my movie maybe would be, if it's not Hocus Pocus, it would probably be, you know what? I'm just going to say Scream 2 because I was thinking about it the other day and the sense that it has Jada Pinkett Smith sort of sitting there at the beginning saying everything I love about Black women, like just talking about Black people in horror movies, and the fact that they put her in Demon Knight shortly after this. I was like, yes, Jada. I really think Scream 2. And you get Jerry O'Connell singing to Neve Campbell in a cafeteria. That's welcome. I'm down for that. Mark, do you have one that you would say besides Hocus Pocus?
Well, obviously, I would say Dennis Miller's starring role in Tales from the Crypt presents Bordello of Blood. Ooh. It's way up there. But I'm probably going to go with a horror movie that is near and dear to me, which I believe may be rotten. It may be a movie we have to talk about at some point, is the original Pet Sematary, because I saw it.
Yes,
it is. I was way too young to be seeing such a film. My aunt took me and my older sister because we convinced her that our parents would be cool with it. And it freaked us out for a while, to this day, basically. If you say the name Zelda around my sister, she ain't thinking about the video game. She's not thinking about Link.
That's the kind of like scarring thing. I definitely read Pet Sematary too early. I started reading Stephen King way too young. I think I started reading Stephen King before I ever saw Hocus Pocus. So that's on me as a person.
You were in the AP horror class long before you saw Hocus Pocus.
I was definitely not. I would avoid it. My dad always tried to get me to watch horror movies, and I was just like, I'm leaving. You can put on a musical, or you can watch this by yourself. Okay, Caitlin, I'm going to leave you kind of with your final thoughts on Hocus Pocus. Would you recommend it, though? Regardless of your thoughts, do you recommend people check it out?
I think I recommend it that people check it out specifically because of all of this love that people have for it. There's a reason why people do love it, whether it be for nostalgia or whether it's a legitimately great movie or whether it's not, et cetera, et cetera. But absolutely, to understand what the fervor is and to kind of be a part of this cultural understanding of why people love it so much, you have to see it.
Yeah, I agree. And if folks want to see it, they can check it out. They can download a digital copy on Fandango Now or Vudu, and or maybe they can go on, you know, online and grab those DVDs as well, because apparently they sold millions of those things. Caitlin, what are you working on at Sci-Fi Wire? What do you want folks to be checking out?
I think you guys should check out Jabba the Pod, which is Sci-Fi Wire's podcast about Star Wars. We are about to hit off our fourth season, where we talk about The Mandalorian season 2, which is obviously coming out on October 30th. We're just sticking with the Disney theme today, but absolutely, it's a really great time. My co-hosts Matt and Brian are some of the loveliest people you'll ever meet. It's a very positive Star Wars fandom heavy show, and if you like to celebrate the series and don't want any of that toxic stuff that goes on, then check us out.
Hot awesome. Take. I think Baby Yoda's name is going to be Binks.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. I don't want him to know the name. I like to keep it under wraps. Don't let the magic get sort of spoiled. But
well, you know, I want me. Him to have the most boring name. I want his name to be like Bob or
Brian,
Jane. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris. Caitlin, where can folks follow you online?
You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Caitlin M. Bush. That's C-A-I-T-L-I-N-M. Bush like the beer, not like the presidents.
Yes. And Mark Ellis, I think people can find you like live, not dead, but alive, correct?
Ooh. Well, at least right now, as far as the social media handles go, it's at Mark Ellis Live. Was trying to put together some sort of Halloween stand-up show, but I wasn't able to do it virtually the way I wanted to, so I think I'm going to push that to Christmas. So I want to do a big Christmas stand-up show that is, and occasionally you can find me now performing through a glass window on the patio of the Comedy Store to people who are outside in the bar. So it ain't traditional stand-up, but it's the best I can do right now. And I can't hear the laughs because I'm performing through a window, but I can see smiles, and that's better than seeing boiling children in a cauldron, even if the kids are bullies. Okay, fine. I feel bad that the bullies died. I feel bad.
Okay. See, he admits it. There we go. You're a better person now just for admitting that. Do you feel better?
What if it turns out the bus driver was a virgin, and that's who the witches were looking for the whole time anyway?
Oh, my God.
And with that hot take,
we want to hear from y'all, because we want to know what movies you think we should be talking about. We want to know, what do you like? What do you like about the show? Email us all of your thoughts, your questions, your concerns, your witticisms at rtiswrong at RottenTomatoes.com. That's RT is wrong at RottenTomatoes.com. It's the big suggestion box, so let us know how we're doing.
Also, wherever you're listening to this, on whichever platform, please like and subscribe, share it with your friends. Again, if you don't like the podcast, there's another one. Go find one of the other movie podcasts and let them know.
You can still
thoughts.
Hit the button before you go. I mean, just because you don't like it, I mean, you can't. You can still hit the like button. You never have
you
to listen
still
to
the like button. Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
And of course, you can find me on all social media platforms at ThatJacqueline. And I will be back next week with Mark, where we will be breaking down another horror-themed, Halloween-themed movie. This time, we're going to the East Coast, and we're going to be talking about Eddie Murphy's Vampire in Brooklyn.
Woo! People were going nuts over Eddie's long hair in this, and
yes.
I rented it one time, and that was the only time I saw it. But I'm going to go ahead and say now that I'm going to be stumping for Kadeem Hardison next week, because he is great in everything he's been in, and I think he's probably going to be the unsung hero of Vampire in Brooklyn.
I already can say, having watched it recently, actually, that you are absolutely right, sir. Does not get enough play. What happened to him, too? I feel like every time we do these, I'm like, what happened to this person? I like that person. But you'll hear us wax about him and Eddie Murphy next week on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. And we hope to see you guys back here then. Bye-bye.